Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. How are you doing today, Joseph?
You know, alive.
Yeah.
Although I'm not half as busy as you and a few of our other teammates. So yeah, it's a fun, busy week. We've got a lot of shows coming up.
We sure do.
Yeah, how are you feeling? I'm pretty sure you're supposed to be editing something right now. What are you doing during the
meeting? 100%. That's correct. Do you want to know the truth of how I'm doing?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the truth. I'm having a really great time.
Good start.
Yeah. We're getting ready to tell some really important, amazing stories, especially for Amplify on Monday night. I'm having a really good time. By the time you hear this, the event will be over, but we have this concert called Amplify on Monday night. And it's with an incredible group of collaborators, just like dream humans. I was thinking about this the other day at home. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting paid to do the thing I've been wanting. Well, I have been doing, you know, for the last 10 years. And that's just incredible. Like, it's so incredible. But I'm also like struggling with like trying to not get run over. There must be a startup term for this. Not get run over by the just like snowballing feeling that like things aren't working or aren't going to work. And it's just a product of like, if you're listening, like, hey, y'all, I'm assuming a lot of you are founders as well. And even if you're a founder, if you're an actor, you're a founder, if you run a business, like I had friends who died in a tornado and like, you know, we're trying to like break into a new business model for our company. And it's unclear exactly how that's all going to play out. And just stuff's tight right now. And it's like that. I'm just like having one of those times where I'm like, I'm struggling a little bit to just keep feeling like it's all possible.
I feel like there is a term for this.
There's got to be, right?
But honestly, before we go there, I'm sorry you're feeling that way.
Oh, thanks. It's okay.
It's been a heavy and
it's a
heady
season.
Mix of weeks and days. There certainly is. And there's definitely an idea of like a sophomore slump in the...
Oh, interesting.
In the sort of startup world where it's like all of that energy that you brought into sort of that first year and that first fundraise and that first product, eventually all that those first become seconds and thirds. And
yeah.
You like look at it and you're like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, you know, that dream pitch deck that you had or that vision and that story you've been telling to other people. And then all of a sudden you're kind of telling it to yourself and you're like,
totally.
Wait, what's real anymore? And at some point it kind of like comes crashing back down to reality because we do live here.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a thing to sort of hit back in that reality and be like, what the hell am I doing? Like, is this even possible? Like, you know, because you're no longer feeding yourself that vision. You're just trying to actually make that vision come true.
Yeah.
And it's like the reality of all the hardship. And I think it's a place to come back to a term that I have taken and adopted from you and the theater community of the cognitive dissonance.
Oh, yeah.
It's like we like kind of have to compartmentalize a little bit and let both of those things be true at the same time. The
totally.
Grand vision that you believe that you can reach and the reality that you are not reaching it.
Yeah, quickly or in a plannable manner.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just a reality that it sucks.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I mean, I definitely feel, and that's why I kind of wanted to bring it up actually, was exactly for that reason. It's like, I know it's the cognitive dissonance. I know it's a season. It's just which I just love to call things seasons, even if that season is 1 week long, right?
Yeah.
What a season. It's a season and it is a product of just like a lot of circumstances coming together that won't last forever, right?
Yeah.
I do obviously believe we can do this and are doing this. It's not. Nothing is like dire at all, you know, and I think it's healthy too to be worried on the occasion. So that's all to say, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because like, I don't think there's any shame or weird, not you're not implying this, but shame or weirdness and saying like, I'm just like struggling. This is a season where I am struggling to believe like we can make all of this happen.
Yeah.
You know, because it happened. Like, that is a thing that happened.
Shit is so real.
Yeah, shit is so real. And I feel like I've told this story before, but it reminds me, just now I realized, it reminds me, the moment that I'm having a hard time with, reminds me of my first waiting job in New York City, which was at Joe Allen, which is a famous theater restaurant. And so this restaurant has a really weird schedule, right? Because everybody fills the restaurant at 5:45. There's basically a seating at 6, 6:15, and 6:30. And then everybody's got to be gone. By 7:30, most people want to be gone, you know, except the real New Yorkers who, like, you know, lumber out 5 minutes before their show.
That stresses me out just thinking about it. It's like, no, I got to be in that theater, in my seat. What if I have to pee? Do I want a drink? I probably want to. I should get a drink.
A $30 sippy cup of wine.
Hey, if I'm going out on the town.
Yeah, do it right.
It's an experience.
And I was panicking, you know, like, I'm wired to want to do a good job. And you're in the middle of that high stress night after night where you're just like, I literally don't know how I'm going to get everybody out of here. And my friend Jimmy Hurley said, sister, every night, everyone goes to the show. It happens every single night. We will get it done. You will get it. It will actually get done. Don't need to stress so much about it. And that is actually exactly what I feel like in this moment of, like, you just described, the moving out of just, like, the big vision part of the work and into the sustainability of that big vision and the driving forward of it. Every day currently has felt like that panic of, how am I going to get everybody fed, paid? Where is the next, you know, customer going to come from, all of that stuff. And it's a little harder than the restaurant to really, like, feel confident that the next thing's going to happen and you're going to keep building the building blocks, because a little bit of it's out of our control.
Yeah, it's like that theater show. We're not putting on that theater show while you're currently serving those people.
And they are not committed to doing something at 8 o'clock. Yeah.
But I feel you. And I do think, like, maybe in whatever this, this jokey startup paradigm, it's like, you know, stage one, great idea, super high. Stage two, sophomore slump. Stage three, something else better happens, right? I'm sure this exists.
That's really bad, though. Like, you need to workshop that and come back and give me something better.
Yeah,
that I can believe in.
Yeah, I swear, something better might, in theory, happen before we all die. I don't know. What's that one in economics? Oh, this is the one I actually like in economics, which is, in the long run, we're all dead.
Yeah, that's good. I like it.
Because, you know, economists love to talk about the long run. It's like, well, you know, across the long run, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. It's like, I can't fucking wait for the long run. Yeah. I got rent to pay.
It's so true. Yeah, it's like a weird, I also found myself just thinking, carrying the, you know, I feel like we talk about this a lot. When you're a theater person, your job is like your life. Like, it's the thing you care the most, you know, it's our reason for being here, right? Is to make art. And so your work colleagues are also your friends and your family, and the work that you do doesn't contain between 9 to 5, which largely is because you really like it. And a startup is in some ways, at least for me, quite like that, right? Like, this is, I've taken that sort of ethos into building something that, like, I want to exist in the world. And that feels like everything, which exacerbates these seasons of, like, being very, very worried that it's not going to work out.
Yeah, all the eggs in that one basket.
Which is not true. Also, to cognitive dissonance, isn't true.
Not true at all.
It's not true.
Yeah. I went through a phase of that in, like, 2017 where I had a little bit of a breakdown.
No, don't tell me that.
We were just like, I can't have my identity be so wrapped up in work because it's not healthy for me in that moment. And that was like, I think I wasn't a founder at that time. And so it did feel a bit more like a broken contract between, you know, the world that I was promised by this startup culture nonsense. Fun fact, startup culture is nonsense. It's good nonsense. It's bad nonsense. It's nonsense. So it does feel a bit different and a bit better to be in the founder role and to have a bit more control and a bit more skin in the game, because you can't ask the same founder mentality of people who are not founders.
No.
They don't have the same skin. They don't have the same financial upside. It's not the same.
Yeah.
So go take your startup founder mentality and shove it.
You're so stupid. Well, I think that's an awesome segue into our guest today, because they are two people that make me feel confident again and make me remember we're part of an ensemble in some ways, right? Of a lot of other people working in similar fields and on certain and similar visions as us.
Yeah, they are wonderful. And I am really excited that we got to talk to them today and that you all get to hear this conversation.
So they're a duo today. Carlin Connolly is a performer, a startup co-founder, and she wrote in her bio for us, but I can also confirm from personal experience this is true, an amateur dinner party host. She does it very well.
Oh,
I
she
think.
Does crush a dinner party.
Crushes it. Yeah. She's the cheese board of dreams. she is one half of a cool company called Marquee Digital with Joe Chisholm, who is her co-founder. And he is also an actor and an entrepreneur based in New York City. He's got a really cool history. He have founded a web design company about 10 years ago. So that's been like his side gig, which has helped immensely, I imagine, in the founding of Marquee Digital.
Yeah. And Marquee Digital, their amazing company, which we're going to talk all about across this episode, is interactive digital programs for audiences. So they're stepping into and disrupting a space that hasn't changed for 100 years, longer than that. And with it, they bring a focus on accessibility, on sustainability. And there's a lot of like really, really nice sentiment underneath why this company should exist just beyond disrupting the market, which I think is really, really important in this era of new companies.
Also, we're incredibly biased. We've used the Marquee Digital for a couple of shows and think it's a really, really important component to successful live digital. So sorry, not sorry.
Super biased, showing our hand. But now that we've said it aloud, it doesn't count.
Yeah. We hope you enjoy getting together with Joe and Carlin of Marquee Digital. Hey, Carlin. Hey, Joe. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Happy Tuesday. Where are you all coming in from?
From Hamilton Heights, New York, at my desk.
And Hamilton Heights, New York, in my closet.
Very posh. The Hamilton Heights like helps to elevate it, and the closet brings it back down to reality.
Yep.
That's right. For those of you, maybe we'll just take a screenshot only for subscribers or something, because you should really see this.
Subscribers only.
Yeah, exactly. We'll start our Patreon just off the basis of this.
Perfect.
Screenshot.
Perfect.
Oh, Lord. All right. So we have been dying to have you all on, because I'm sure, as you know, we talk about live digital here at the Get Together, as well as like theater and accessibility and technology and all those good topics. And you friends are some of our biggest inspirations in this space. And so we've just been waiting for the day to get to talk to you. And so maybe we should kick it off with a little bit about yourselves, in case folks are not familiar with the myth, the legends that are Joe and Carlin and Marquee Digital.
Well, let me start off by saying that, you know, the feeling is so mutual. You two and what you do inspires us deeply, and we feel so lucky. I was thinking about the way we were introduced, and it was sort of by chance that a little article was published about us, and Emily McGill saw that, and she shared it with you, I think. And then all of a sudden, a beautiful friendship was launched, and we feel so, so lucky and so inspired by you. Believe it or not, we are coming up on our 1 year anniversary of inception here. March 31st will be the day that the idea for Marquee Digital was born.
Yep. Can't believe it's already been a year.
It feels like so much longer.
So much. Yeah. And yet still so much still to do.
Yeah. It's sort of like that weird pandemic year syndrome where, you know, it's like a full lifetime and also no time at all. But Marquee Digital was born on March 31st of last year. Joe and I are roommates, and we were sitting out on the stoop, or I was. He came back from a run and had this thought, gym thought, run thought, I don't know what you called it. but yeah, he said, you know, at the time all the restaurants were reopening, we were seeing a lot of QR code based menus all around New York City. And he said, you know, it's so odd. Why is no one doing this for theater? Why are people not doing QR code programs, digital programs? And I said, well, surely someone's doing it. And, you know, we went away and did our research, and no one was doing it the way we wanted to see it done. And we happened to be super lucky that Joe is an incredible web designer and has run a web design business for the past 10 years, on top of also being an incredible actor and performer. And so we just sort of dove right in. And Joe, you can take over here, but I think, what did we spend, 2 weeks working on the full idea and the product demo? And then we hit the ground running, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Lord, I need to have her introduce me all the time. it was kind of a crazy couple of weeks, because as soon as we realized that, you know, there were a couple places, companies out there that were creating essentially, you know, glorified PDFs, mm-hmm. like taking truly just like a paper native thing and just putting it into the digital sphere, and that was not really what we wanted to do, because we realized that, you know, if you're going to ask someone to take the leap of faith in the digital world forward, you know, what they need to have in their hands needs to be digitally native. It needs to mm-hmm. be focused and modern and new and engaging and accessible. All of the things that a printed playbill is not. And, you know, I meant playbill lower P, not playbill capital P trademark. But you know, I mean, the way we've been using printed programs hasn't changed since the late 1800s. Like we set that template, and it's kind of remained the same.
Cool.
And yeah, right. I mean, you know, like when we were first thinking of, like, as we started our Instagram prior to launch and you know, dropping this little kind of cute ideas and things like that, like we were using gas lamps in theaters. when the iterate, like the version of programs that we know today still were first introduced, you know, like, and it, I mean, granted, there's a whole lot of the theater world that still needs to modernize in many, many ways. And that's a long, 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 long conversation.
How long did y'all spend researching the history of the lowercase P playbill? Like, this is a history lesson right now. How much of that first 2 weeks was dedicated to research on the playbill?
I mean, ironically, lowercase P history is essentially very much related to uppercase P history in terms of playbill. So it's kind of all like tagged together, because they, you know, they kind of run the ship for a while. They have. And yeah. And so we wanted to change the game. And we knew that there were so many ways that, you know, you could translate from my world of web design, web development, you know, translate the accessibility factor and introducing every other aspect of, you know, modern digital magic into a modern digital program that really, you know, it extends connectivity between audience and theater and writers and artists and audience and local business. And it just spiders out in like exponentially as soon as you harness technology for all of the good that it can offer. But yeah, that was a whole long rambling thing about, I think, the genesis of our... So usually Carlin's right next to me whenever we have business meetings, and this is about the time that she'll either elbow me or like kick me in the knee saying that I've spoken too much.
No, it's much less violent than that. It's normally like a gentle nudge.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A Facebook poke.
Yes, exactly. There it is. Exactly. But yeah, I think, I mean, that kind of sums it up, how we began. And, you know, over the course of that first 2 weeks, we started to see that what presented initially as like an opportunity to create, you know, a problem solve for a COVID issue, which is like eliminating touch points, actually was the answer to many, many larger questions that we didn't even think to ask. So like Joe said, you know, we suddenly thought, oh, wow, there's actually a huge accessibility thing we can do here. And that led to Joe working in, you know, a widget for ADA compliance. And so we have a screen reader and dyslexia-friendly font and all of these wonderful things that are, again, not available in a paper program. We also were able to offer to theaters the opportunity to share a program with their their people that were present in the space and then the people that were at home watching digitally, which, you know, to marry those two experiences together into one shared experience was really exciting for us. And, you know, social media engagement, all of that, wrapping everything up into one package, and being able to share it as a digital native experience for the theater goer, we just thought was so powerful. And we've had opportunities working with you two to use, you know, live polling and data collection, you know, with the audience in the venue. And it's just, it's been an incredible tool for connectivity, which is what it is really at the heart of the product itself. Connecting, you know, every disparate facet of the arts and technology, and being able to share that as one community.
Roses and thorns. What you're very like, what are you most proud of? Hmm. Or was the most exciting moment of your last year, this past year?
I would have to say the most exciting moment was actually towards the end of this this last calendar year, seeing that, you know, being a fledgling startup, we surpassed 75,000 marquees opened on like across the world. And then the other added thing to that, which has just recently happened, was when we threw together the initial demo, we created a completely fake musical, which should be created into a real musical. We can do that later down the road.
The dramaturgy that I did on this fake musical that
deep,
does not exist.
Deep, very, very deep. But you know, we invited all of our friends who were willing to be a part of it as like the actors and the creatives, so we could show all the uses of it. And so we had to create a bio for Marquee because we were in the creative section. And so we threw together a very kind of aspirational, fake-ish bio because our company hadn't fully launched yet. And
like had literally zero clients at
yeah,
this point.
Nothing, didn't exist at all. And the very last sentence of the bio was, and Marquee is thrilled to be making its premiere in the West End market in spring of 2022. You know, and completely just saying this stuff, realizing that this is a completely fake musical and a fake musical program. And then fast forward to a month ago, we made our London premiere pre-spring, and might have another one coming up in actual spring. So like this really kind of strange manifestation, which has just been a series of, you know, serendipitous meetings, like us meeting you and you know, these couple of people that have come into our lives that have just sprouted conversations with the other more people, and just like it's all just kind of happened in this beautiful way. But that was definitely like the fact that we were able to just look at that and be like, oh wow, we made that actually happen, was exciting.
That is so incredible. Congrats.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's funny. It reminds me of like there's a startup trope. It's like, I feel like it's like someone wrote a book sometime in the past 20 years. It was like, you know what everyone should do at a startup? They should do visualization exercises. Everyone should get freaking construction paper and markers and write down like absurd goals for the future. And you know, the whole idea of like, you know, if you're, what is that saying? If you aim for the moon, you end up in the stars or something like that. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars.
Yes, that one.
Voiceover like extraordinaire, yeah. Carlin Connolly, giving you a free taste of that.
And like, there is obviously some truth in that. Like, if you don't have big goals, then you're never going to reach for them. But I like that you all didn't go through like the trite version of like creating these goals in some superficial way. There was like a really like genuine connection to that as a goal that manifested itself through the creation of this description inside of this sort of beta version. I love just like how true it is, but it also sort of ties into that startup trope. Because, you know, at the end of the day, y'all are a startup.
Wait, I have a question, actually. This was something we had talked, Joe and I talked about back in the pandemic, that I found particularly challenging. So I'm really curious how you all dealt with it. A friend of mine, you know, says, like, big ideas need big space, right? And that was hard to come by, at least in my experience, in the pandemic. Like, we ended up solving for it by instituting a walking meeting on Fridays just to, like, get out of the apartment and not have to be in the weeds and just talk. Did you all run into that as a challenge with a starting a startup during a pandemic?
I think, interestingly, I feel like I've sort of grappled with the opposite experience because I think that the pandemic actually created space for me in a way that I didn't have it before.
Wow.
And so, I mean, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say that our product almost exactly how it is, it's undergone some, you know, recent design upgrades, and actually, like, go check it out because what Joe did is really beautiful.
Cool.
But our product pretty much like fully came to fruition in 2 weeks, and the amount of concentrated thinking, talking, question asking and answering and conversations that had to happen in that period. I mean, I can't imagine being able to problem solve the way that we did right now, because right now I feel like I'm 3 times as busy as I was back then. I know it's ironic that you say that about the walking meeting, because Joe was just saying to me the other day, you know, we were having these discussions thinking about the future of what we want to do with the company. And, you know, he was saying, oh, I wouldn't have any of these thoughts if I weren't like out at the gym or walking the dog or whatever. And the very idea that sparked Marquee came from a run.
Oh, right.
He was out on a run. Yeah. So, I definitely feel what you're talking about, but it for me wasn't pandemic related. It was something different altogether. It has to do with like the amount of busyness that I'm absorbed in my life, I think.
And I think, I think we kind of, it benefited in both of those ways. Like it helps that we are roommates and best friends. And so, you know, every morning we sat at the coffee table behind me and we had our meetings over coffee and, you know, chatted things out. And we still do that every morning. But you know, we normally wouldn't have that time available to us before the pandemic time for us to really carve out the time to be together and focus on that. And then for me, my running, like that is it's my therapy. It's my everything. It's like the time where my brain slows down enough to actually like be able to think through things. So on the daily, especially right now, as we're kind of moving towards phase two and beyond of Marquee, if I'm out on a run, or if I'm walking the dog, or if I'm coming back from the gym, I'll like immediately go and knock on Carlin's door. I'm like, gym thought. And then like spew out a whole bunch of complete, like a random word vomit, and then like try and pick nuggets of something from it. And then we like circle back and try to see if it was worth anything. And half the time it isn't, but,
not true.
But yeah, it's been both.
Well, how civilized it sounds to work for your company. So we have a coffee around the table, and then we, you know, walk the dog, and then we come back and we get to work.
Oh, that's because we have a common enemy, which is the dog. So that's the chaos. And so we have to balance out the chaos as much as possible.
I just want to validate your gym thoughts. I leave him, my Joe, weekend stuff thread in Slack, because so often that's like when I'm out to dinner or seeing a show or just working at home and thinking about stuff. And so I leave him a thread of those, exactly what you said, Joe. Just thought, so we should probably see if there's something in there. Maybe there's not. Maybe it's just for reference and legacy.
I've thought of like, you know, taking out my phone and jotting down notes and then coming back. And the one time I did that, I like looked back on it. And I don't know if you've ever like written notes down and like looked back, and it's complete chicken scratch and it makes no sense. It's English language, but it's jarbled. Yeah. So it's immediately, I like sprint home and I immediately just like throw it all out there. Cause I know that the minute, it's like waking up from a dream, 5 seconds later, it just kind of like disappears and you're like, no, no, I solved world hunger in that dream. We had flying cars and I know how to achieve it, but it's gone now.
I quite like voice memos for that sort of a thing. And I love, Jess will send me a voice memo every once in a while with a thing kind of like this, the weekend thoughts or the gym thoughts. And they're usually like, I think I understand what she's saying. We're going to have to connect on it, but at least we have this digital representation of this idea. So we have something to come back to. Because what you're just describing feels like anytime I've like tripped and I'm like, I had the most brilliant ideas in the world, or, you know, I write them down and then like I come back the next day, I'm like, oh, I was tripping. Like quite literally, I was tripping.
Oh, on drugs.
Oh, yes, yes. Not, I was like, not tripping and falling in physical space.
Do you have ideas when you trip and fall?
But rather when I'm doing psychedelic drugs.
I was so confused.
Same.
clearly we're all figuring out which crowds we belong to sign up. I'm the microdosing startup of this group, it seems.
Yes.
We're the coffee table dog walking people.
Oh shit. I also wanted to ask you guys, as we all know, starting a company and trying to sell your product, you talk to 1 million people. What are the conversations in your sphere with the customers you're talking to around accessibility and like why they are expressing interest in the version of the program you're building versus just doing a PDF for themselves? Like what is that conversation looking like over in program land?
Yeah, I think this is going to sound a little bit pessimistic, but I think the accessibility features have been so important to us and to a lot of the colleagues that we've spoken to. But in the actual conversations with, you know, clients or potential clients, it seems like a bit of a, you know, just sort of like a, oh, that's really nice. We didn't really think about that, you know. And it's interesting that people actually, the question they're asking before accessibility is actually like, what am I going to do about my patrons who need paper? And we, you know, we've come up with a couple solutions for that. I don't want to take us too far off this topic, but we offer like a one sheet that the theater can print in-house that, you know, is still cutting down on paper, which is a huge part of our initiative. And then we've also, you know, we've really encouraged theaters to incentivize season ticket membership with like, you'll get a printed program if you're a season ticket member, because, you know, the people who tend to be season ticket holders tend to be older and, you know, more traditional and so on and so forth. So we've also said, you know, sell programs, whatever, you know, you boost your sales, save your money, boost your sales, produce more theater, so on and so forth. But yeah, I think we, Joe and I did a program for a concert at Green Room 42 recently with a young creator who's got, you know, quite a TikTok following, and she's really, I mean, incredible, and thinking about producing and live experiences in a really interesting way. And it's on our list to get us all together in a room.
Yes, please.
But, you know, I think she was asking us, you know, who is your audience and who are you talking to when you're like posting things and so on. And, you know, we said right now we're talking to a lot of folks that we have to convert a little bit. But I think ideally we would love to be talking to like those young arts professionals, the young arts administrators who are looking to change things up, who have different priorities, like, you know, like we do, priorities like saving paper and becoming more accessible and, you know, creating experiences that are live and digital and available to more people, and getting, you know, our whole agenda to just a wider demographic of people. I think, you know, those are the people we're really excited about talking to. And that's a big part of like this sort of forthcoming initiative of how we're looking to expand the product. Yeah, Joe, I don't know if you want to add some more on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people that we have heard feedback in terms of the accessibility features that we've kind of implemented into the marquee, you know, it's not, you know, the first level client is obviously most often the theater that hires us. And they sometimes think it's cool, I want to take advantage of it, but it's actually when we hear back from them, it's their audience members who have utilized it and thought, I mean, because we worked with an accessibility consultant very early on, because we really wanted to make sure that we were checking as many boxes as possible. And she brought up this brilliant idea of, you know, offering an opportunity for the artistic director or the writer of the show, or even the artists themselves, to record their own bios and implementing an audio player of that with the written bios. So you're not, it's better than that very generic clawing screen
TikTok
reader voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you actually get to hear the artists themselves speak.
That's
and
so
you
cool.
know, when it's the writer, you know, it's really cool to be able to hear that in their own words. And we're wanting to implement that for even further with our, because we've done a couple of art fairs and that kind of market that we're kind of dipping into, you know, letting the artists of the physical art you're looking at cool. speak to it. And, you know, it's just that kind of immediate connection. That's what we hear people hook into that. They feel like they are then a part of it, that they are closer to the piece, to the people doing the piece, to the community writ large. So it's funny to see these features, the positive effect that they have on the audience. You know, you would think that these theaters would immediately want that, but they don't really know at this point in time that those options are really out there. It's only through use that they get to see the benefit mm-hmm. of focusing on accessibility, focusing on connectivity. And so, I mean, we've said from the beginning, we try to be kind of a turnkey solution for theaters, but you know, until they know that this option is out there, they don't really know what they're missing out on. They're living in the black and white world when we're trying to give them full on post
Technicolor.
Post Twister, Wizard of Oz yeah. Technicolor, you know?
Do y'all know or use the term universal design at all in your conversations with your clients?
No.
It's one that Jess and I talk about often that I love, and I'll speak for Jess. She loves it too.
I do. Can confirm.
And it's the idea that ideas or features or functionality that is born out of an accessible like focus or an accessible world of like, hi, we are recording, you know, these actor bios so that people who cannot like see them and read them on the screen can hear them. But that it's such a good feature. It's such a good design that it actually impacts and improves everyone else's experience as well. Mm. So it's like, I was thinking just as you were describing, you know, the actors recording their bios, I was like, yeah, I want that. Yeah, I want to listen to that versus reading it. That sounds amazing. Yeah. And like, I don't need that feature. I can physically read the thing, but that feature sounds so much better than me reading the thing. I would much prefer that. And I love things like that because it does act as that bridge for the person who is like, oh, I'm either not thinking about it or I'm like a jerk and I'm consciously like ignoring accessible people's and accessible features. And it gives them that tether that they can relate to because, you know, that's just so often what we need for that, just to get the door open and get people mm-hmm. thinking in a more broad fashion.
Yeah.
So that they start looking back and seeing more and seeing more people and seeing more people's needs through the lens of something that they actually have a, you know, a personal or emotional connection to.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have the, you know, the immediate thought that, oh, something that's more specialized for an accessibility needed audience member is you know, it's limited because of just the nature of the need of that person. When in reality, most of these features, they open the umbrella up. They enhance every experience for everyone. And so the idea of being accessible is not just, you know, it's not letting all groups in, well, it is, but it's really just it's raising everyone up to a higher level that even those who don't necessarily need to benefit from accessibility features, you know, their, like you said, their experience is heightened, it's enhanced, mm-hmm. it's everything mm-hmm. levels up, so everyone benefits.
Yeah, I find myself thinking of the Joe and Jess school of bullying people into using the services and investing in the things we think are important, which is to say that, you know, like we started by just deciding to incorporate interpretation ASL services. Like if you work with us, if we consult for you and we build a live digital show, you're getting, it's in the thing. It's kind of non-negotiable, mm-hmm. right? And we were real nervous about that because it's another cost. And as you all know, trying to find that balance of how much you cost is so hard, but like no one really batted an eye. And so we did that. And just recently in the news flash to you too, in the last couple months, we've started putting into our decks like two more things, which are the marquee and the Nico booth, which are, or like, you know, virtual red carpet, because we think both of those things are really important. And I agree with what both of you are saying is to me why marquee, why a digital program and the way you have envisioned it together is so important is not about its ability to deliver you information or even just alone the accessibility component. To me, what I immediately thought when I saw it was that it is the mechanism by which something I have thought since 2013 needs to happen, can happen, which is if you have a direct connection to the creators inside the show and you become connected to them across time, i.e. can I connect with your voice? Can I connect with your social media? I am more likely to invest in you and get to know you and then come see the show or go to the theater because I know all these incredible creators that I see at that theater. And for me, this is like, that's the tool. You're right. The marquee is the tool to get that done. And we, you know, we saw that even with a little bit that we did on Waldorf.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we initially envisioned ourselves as like that bridge from COVID time to normal time, you know, being affixed to contact lists, all that kind of need. But very, very quickly, we realized that actually, no, the heart of Marquee, it's community building. It's, mm-hmm. it's connectivity between all people. And I think everyone kind of thinks that, oh yeah, their little regional theater or large regional theater or their arts organization, you know, they are their own little community and they totally are, but we're trying to go above that. We're trying to zoom out at a macro level and build communities, not only amongst these smaller circles, but the artists that dip their toes in for a brief time or the businesses surrounding them. And then that just spiders out and then spiders out and then spiders out. And, you know, just kind of building this large overarching community is kind of, I think, the end goal of any kind of, you know, digitally native company, but especially kind of what we're trying to achieve.
Something you were saying earlier about the gal at Green Room 42, I feel like a real gift of the kind of work that we all are doing and this time, which is the beginning of times for many, 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 particularly arts organizations, but a lot of people with just anything that has to do with live digital, is that there's like two sides of the coin to work. There's the side you all were talking about a second ago, which is teach the people, get it in their hands, make them understand what is even possible. And then there's this other side of creators and folks that are already digitally native and are thinking about like stuff that the other, you know, group of folks don't even know exists, right? Like all the things that we talk about all the time. And I find it challenging, but I also find it deeply fulfilling to be able to work both sides of those things. And I'm not sure that's ever happened in my career and my wanderings across time, that you get to flex both sides of those muscles, you know?
Yeah, we've had the opportunity to connect with a lot of, you know, folks like us, but from, you know, disparate areas of the arts and or technology, mm-hmm. And startups too, you know? And I think what's been really cool for us is to be able to get into those rooms, share our experience, our knowledge, and, you know, and where we want to go, connect with these folks and see them come around to thinking about things in a way that they never did before. And I'm talking about people, you know, people our age, not, mm-hmm. these are not, you know, people who have been in arts administration for their entire career. These are like young people who consider themselves change makers and young producers, and to sit down and go, you know, have you ever thought about how this would work? And to see how quickly these folks are, you know, opening their mind to the possibilities. I think in a lot of circumstances, the technology, especially, you know, Web3, like it's so new that like a lot of folks in the theater space, especially, you know, don't really know anything about it and don't even understand, like haven't yet scratched the surface on the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And so to see all of that coming to fruition as we're having these conversations and seeing people's brains start to compute this information in new and exciting ways is really thrilling and gives, I think, both of us, you know, a lot of hope for what the next 5 to 10 years will hold.
And like, and I think, you know, it might be the same for you guys. This period of time in the past 2 years has, for all of the awfulness it's brought into the world, what it has also done is made humanity writ large more malleable and more mm-hmm. adaptable to change and technology mm-hmm. and the use, especially in the theater world. I think people are more willing to be you know, flexible in terms of trying new things simply because there was no other option available at the time. The old way was not you know, it was not something they could do. And so, you know, everyone was adaptable. Everyone was more willing. Had we tried to launch Marquee 2 years, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, it never would have happened. Mm-hmm. it would have been, we would have been Sisyphus just like pushing that rock up the hill in perpetuity.
Mandy Patinkin as Sisyphus.
Yes. Oh, yes. The, yeah. Yes.
Okay, good. Yes. Good.
Wait, needs to Google. Oh. I mean, I know who Mandy Patinkin is, but I do not know Sisyphus.
Stupid role. Stupid.
But yeah, I mean, I think now we're going to see as we're going back a little bit more towards a normal time, if that flexibility starts to become more rigid again. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that we had enough time to really kind of plant these seeds, hopefully. But I mean, that's all saying like we are standing on the shoulders of companies like you that have been doing this for years and years and years, even when there was a time like that's long before people, you know, were willing to be as flexible as they are now. And by flexible, I mean, they're not doing backflips. Like they're just like, they're doing toe touches right now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just, it's amazing what you guys have managed to do. Especially, you know, before the community really had to be willing to change. So like yeah, I mean, so I'm thankful A, for your friendship, and B, for the knowledge that you guys have given us over this friendship, but also C, because you guys have opened the door for a lot of other tech-minded theater folk to be able to try to, you know, make a difference.
I think it goes right back to what we were talking about, you know, just a few minutes ago. It's this creating these circumstances that at the time were not necessary, but opened people's minds and opened the doors to show what is possible, you know, just because we didn't have to do virtual programming 10 years ago doesn't mean it didn't add to the experience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, you two have been pioneering in this space since long before it was a necessity, since it, you know, and now in the time when it was a necessity, we suddenly see like people are adaptable to it. They're amenable to it. They're going, oh, hey, this is not so bad, you know, which is great. And I think we've benefited from that same kind of mindset as well.
I keep feeling like, oh, it takes a village, you know, but I love the both of you so much for the words that you just shared. They're really sweet, but they're also like the exact reason that like this podcast specifically exists is for like this community of people that we want to help foster, but more so just be part of. Because like the two of us alone in this office, like it can only go so far. It can only grow so big. We need the marquee digitals and the U2 of the world in order for this thing to actually become a reality. So thank you.
The what's possible gets bigger, right? Like that's what I always feel when we have these conversations. Like our what's possible is big, but limited. It's finite. Like there is an end point, and all of a sudden when you start talking to folks who have, you know, adjacent sort of hopes, dreams, ambitions, and values, the what's possible just gets so much bigger, which also helps you keep going when it's real hard.
Yeah.
You're like, maybe we'll actually all do this.
Yeah, it's sort of like extending the reach of one circle to a Venn diagram that then extends into another and another and another until, you know, you've covered so much more surface area than you could have alone. And, you know, we definitely feel like the places where we overlap, you know, are so exciting with, you know, between Broadway Unlocked and Marquee Digital. But then, you know, we're also strengthened by those places where you have expertise and we don't, which is, by the way, like a lot of places.
Nah, I don't know about that.
That sounds like a perfect transition to Web3 and DAOs, right?
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Joe just side-slacked me. POAP.
That was as much a note to myself as a Slack to Jess. But I did want to ask y'all specifically, because Carlin, you did mention Web3, so this is your fault.
I did. Is it fault or is it purposeful? I
don't know. Look out, because we're on a tear this week outing people as like crypto bros.
But just if y'all are thinking about that space, because there feels like there are a lot of parallels to what you're already doing. POAP that Jessa mentioned is proof of attendance protocol for anyone who's listening and has no idea what we're talking about, which is, you know, happens. But the idea that, you know, there would be little sort of not tchotchkes, but like digital sort of memorabilia is also a word I hate that I'm stuck on right now and I can't get past. So someone can jump in and save me right now.
No way.
I feel like every digital creator is a little bit stuck on memorabilia when we need to be, you know, creating whatever the future version of that is to be. We haven't quite come down to a word for it, I feel. But we are moving in that direction. I think, you know, Joe and I both are so excited about the possibilities for Marquee as things start moving toward Web3. I mean, you know, we were definitely born as a Web2.0 company. Mm-hmm. But we see so many incredible applications of blockchain technology as we start to move into the future. And I mean, you know, we've been talking with you two about NFTs and what that would look like, how mm-hmm. that could be incorporated into the ultimate, you know, platform that we eventually see ourselves building. And we are actually in the process of getting the software iteation of Marquee up and running.
Hey,
so that's really
congrats.
Exciting. Yeah, yeah. And that sort of puts us one step closer mm-hmm. to the kind of Web3 agenda that we, you know, the roadmap, if you will. But yeah, I mean, I think we definitely are, you know, interested in having this conversation with you two, especially because the possibilities are just infinite. And we're so excited about the way that we think we'll be able to use this technology to really build the community and engage with the community in new and really exciting ways.
Yeah. She just nailed it all again. I don't know why I'm even starting to speak, but
you're just like, I'm just calling to attention to the fact that I have nothing else to say.
I have nothing of value to add. No, I mean, yeah, our morning meetings now, basically, you know, we now have a workflow for the current iteration of Marquee. So that's kind of a nicely oiled wheel that just kind of turns. And then this new phase, which is the software development and, you know, capital raising, like that kind of era that we are in right now, takes up about 50% of our coffee meetings. And the other 50% is Web3 and its application to the theater industry and its application to, you know, Marquee and the future version of Marquee that we are planning out. And it really is, it's exciting. It's terrifying because, you know, none of us know anything really. Like, there's even the people that are the crypto bros that are carrying the Bored Apes and everything like that. Like no one knows what 5 years from now, what mm-hmm. Web3 is going to be. We're in the true dial-up phase of Web3, which is so exciting, but also terrifying. But just the infrastructure that's already in place in terms of how it's going to be able to apply to the theater industry, to, you know, I think to digital programs and that kind of connectivity and community building. There's a lot of fun stuff that we are talking about and thinking about, and we're just kind of waiting for, you know, we're waiting for the infrastructure to catch up mm-hmm. with the ideas. And so, yeah, there's a lot there that I think is exciting. But you know, it's something where we're waiting for the general public to really understand and buy into, because it's not going to, you know, the theater industry already is very stubborn to change.
What?
That, you know, it's going to take a large wave of public adoption before we can really utilize the tool sets that are going to be available to us. So
even then,
you know,
there's going to be a resistance.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Like the resistance to the digital program.
Right.
And then you're like,
right.
Hi, we got actually something new. We got something new already.
Get a wallet and get an NFT. Yeah, no, it's going to be another Sisyphus moment, but the possibilities just like, oh man, it's exciting. I nerd out over it constantly.
I think that's something that, you know, we're kind of excited about, that we've already done sort of the small uphill battle of like the getting the digital programs out there and getting people to adopt them and getting them just to, you know, just to try it. Just try it for a year and see. And you know, now it's like, okay, we're getting into the hands of people, the young people who will eventually be, you know, really engaging with this new technology. They're already comfortable with the digital programs.
Right, right.
So now we're already in their hands. And then what can we do with that community? And you know, how can we kind of put a little bug in their ear to see the possibilities of the future. And Joe White, I'm very, very interested to know more about like what is going on in your world of Web3 studies, because Joe and I listened to, I think it was the most recent episode of this podcast where you mentioned your recent studies. And we were both like, oh.
Studies. Yeah, yeah. I do. I have been playing in the space for a number of years now, kind of, you know, just found things that I was interested in. The one that I cite often, which is still my fave, is a network called Helium. And this company was like, oh, we want to basically create like a mesh Wi-Fi network to just kind of like, you know, blanket the planet. And they were like, how the heck can we do this? This is going to be really expensive. We want to do that. And then they leaned into blockchain technology and the idea of a decentralized network. So I, as a member of this community, own this little hotspot miner that takes my personal Wi-Fi or my personal internet that I, you know, purchased through Spectrum or whatever, and it propagates it out through the Helium network, and it connects with all the other Helium hotspots that happen to exist, you know, within this metropolitan area, and they're kind of all over the place now. There's thousands of them across the country. And that creates this mesh network for, you know, not for like our internet or video streaming or anything like that, but like bird scooters so that they can connect up to the internet and like download new firmware, or, you know, electronic dog collars so that you can have a tracking chip on dog collars.
I wish everyone could see Joe Chisholm's face right now. It's amazing.
And it's really cool. So by like being part of this community, I earn Helium tokens that are worth money, and it helps to generate this mesh Wi-Fi network. And I bought into it because I was like, this is cool. I think this should exist. At the time, I had no idea how really the blockchain worked or how I would play a role in it or how decision making happens and how proposals get sort of outlined. And now I'm like deep in that world. But it like happened because I just was like, this is a cool idea. I want to play with this. I want to like, you know, just be part of this. And it's given me like a nice foundation, which I'm very, very grateful for now. So when people are talking about, you know, decentralized finance and all that nonsense, I'm like, okay, I think I understand what you're talking about. You're like, there's a token on a token on a token. Got it. Cool. Bye. And I'm now like sort of dabbling a bit more in sort of like the DAO's world. And I myself am trying to learn Solidity, which is the language that smart contracts are built on top of. It's exceptionally difficult. And
well, if anyone can do it, it's you.
but yeah, I'm just like, I'm still definitely, I feel so strongly that idea that we've all said, which is like, it's so early. It's still so freaking early. And it's still so exciting. Like things are not yet invented. You know, they haven't been adopted. They haven't been pioneered. They haven't been taken over by Amazon or Facebook or some other company that's going to try, right? Which just like makes it fun and exciting. And I'm very much not trying to get rich, although that would be a nice accident.
For sure.
Always.
But I feel like it's still like a really exciting time to get in. And I want to like continue to encourage anyone who's listening and anyone who hears me talking about this to be like, just go dabble. Like, don't worry about the fact that you probably missed the boat on this Bored Ape nonsense, because it's nonsense. It's rich people foolishness, which we like to talk about a lot on this podcast.
Copyright Anna Crowley.
Yeah. And it's just still so exciting. And like, there's so much space and so much time for people to just jump in and dabble and to mess around and maybe accidentally get rich.
You never know.
You never know.
See, on the back on the Jess and Joe school of bullying people into doing things, we were signing to do a live digital show that we're gonna do in a month and a half with a really big property that has a huge young fan base, and I turned to Joe and I was like, I'm calling friends who are involved in a, you know, Web3 theater based company. I think we should make a PO app for this. I don't care if it's not worth anything right now. We will see. Just mm-hmm. put it in everybody's hands that attends the virtual version of this. And someday it could be worth a ton of money. It could also not, but like there's nothing to lose right now because it's so early.
Even what you were just talking about, even if you said you put that in the hands and it had worked out, and you know, even if it's not worth anything, I mean, right now, what it is worth like so much is that entire audience group, had they never had anything to do with the Web3 space before, were just given something, you know, an NFT or something like essentially for free, even though there's no like inherent value in that itself. We have now just brought them into that community. And that just makes public adoption that much easier if you can figure out, and that's something like we talk about, is how, what's the easiest way to introduce theater audiences, or to not just introduce the idea, but to almost, you know, trick them, mm-hmm. like get them, mm-hmm. get them to buy into it, mm-hmm. without realizing what they're doing, and make it, make the transition into it as easy, and again, as engaging, and those are the things that we ask ourselves about the digital program as well. It's like, how we, if we are asking someone to make the leap from a printed program to a digital program, it can't just be enough. Right. It has to be engaging. It has to hook them. It has, there has to be incentives. There has to be something to heighten and enhance their experience. And it's going to be the same way this time around. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to present the theater or Web3 space in a way that, that has, you know, an enhancement value to their daily life. You know, whether or not that's money or some other value is what we have to figure out. But, you know, that's how we're going to get people to adopt it and accept it. And then once everyone does it, that's when like the fun stuff gets to happen.
That's what, but Joe asked the other day on, I don't know if you heard this episode, he was asking me what I thought the currency would be for digital audiences, like a, you know, what are we trading? What is, what's going to set aside a successful live digital and therefore digital audience?
Wow, I'm smart.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
I do not remember asking this question.
Oh, really?
I listened to this episode.
Yeah, totally. And I said,
microdosing.
Yeah, exactly. But I said connection, and that's what that POAP means to me. It's not really the Web3 stuff, although I too am excited and also grumpy, but like more excited than grumpy about all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, the POAP says there's value to being a part of a digital audience, right? A digital audience doesn't work if it's just people at home by themselves in their living room. Digital audience works when you feel connected and you've found an identity inside that group of people who are sharing an experience together. And that POAP lends value to that, right? Even if it's not worth money, like you said, Joe, it's just like a token, right? Like a talisman almost of being a digital audience member.
Well, I mean, and that's, I mean, as much as, you know, there's plenty to grumble and roll eyes about, you know, the Bored Ape, you know, the crypto bro communities, but the whole concept of, you know, those NFT collections, when they like what their initial value when that one was first released, they weren't expecting it to be multi hundreds of millions of dollars of profit. That happened because they didn't raise any money through VC or anything like that. That happened because there was a sense of community that was fostered by the owners of these NFTs. So the owners of those tokens, and it's that's what it is. That's the most powerful part to me of the Web3 world, is like it is free, essentially a free means of building a community, like a widespread community that then, you know, it could be me here in Hamilton Heights watching a Broadway Unlocked production, and then someone in, you know, Bangladesh watching it, and each of us receiving a token. And now we are part of the Broadway Unlocked community because we all hold that, like you said, that talisman. It's we are part of the club in a way. And community is incredibly powerful. And oftentimes I think that's worth more and more valuable than, you know, having a monetary value just slapped onto it, because, you know, someone can sell for money, but you don't often back away from a community once you're like rooted into it.
And then on top of that, I think, you know, community is everything to Marquee. It's a huge component of Web3 and you know how that will all play out. But it's also ultimately like the whole Web3 economy is so much about creators and artists. And we are, you know, super excited to see what that means, especially when it comes to, like, you know, we're talking about NFTs, talking about secondary market and resale. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Like actually seeing a kickback to the artist in perpetuity as these things get sold and resold. And, you know, that's amazing. And yes, our coffee conversations often include, you know, hey, what about this part of the industry? You know, how could it play into sheet music sales, a brilliant idea that Joe had, you know, anything that requires licensing, we are like, this is an obvious sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Modulation, you know, from this sort of two-dimensional world that we live in into this Web3 space. It's like, it's just, I don't know, it's very inspiring. It's very exciting. And I think, you know, for a young company like us, that's all about art, technology, and community, it's like, yeah, what a playground, you know?
I appreciate that so much. You just like expanded my mind, or a thing that I've been thinking about, where like, I talk about Web 3 is a chance to solve all of the problems of Web 2. And it's not going to solve all of them. But I think it's a helpful paradigm for getting people interested in it.
Huh, yeah.
And you were just like, yeah, it's like maybe a helpful solution for everything in the world. You're like, yeah, contracting is really complicated. Licensing is exceptionally complicated. Yeah. Can it help solve those problems too? Like, you're thinking even bigger and even broader, which I like. I do think part of the adoption.
The use cases. Yeah. Yeah, the use cases that are going to be applicable, like none of us have even dreamt or like a fraction of a thought of yet. Like, that's what the next 10 years are. That's super exciting. But I mean, I do think like what's interesting is that I caution to use the word pendulum, because usually I'm using it to like to represent the pit in the pendulum, like swing of doom that's over my head, like to push our company forward before someone else gets there first. Yes. Like, I constantly have that feeling. But I mean, I think Web3 really is a pendulum swinging back for a lot of aspects, at least in, you know, the artist industry, where the sudden spread of the digital world in Web2 didn't often benefit artists and creators, because that's when we moved to streaming. We moved to things where people, like, we moved away from actual ownership and more towards streaming values. And the people that lost out were the creators. And now we're swinging back to a world where, you know, there is now digital ownership of assets, of parts of assets, where now we're swinging back where the creators are able to actually still, you know, sell. It's not, you're not selling like an LP album anymore, but what you are selling is a truly digital, non-fungible asset that you then benefit from in perpetuity, should that be sold or traded, and then traded. And I think it's answering a lot of, like you said, problems that the Web 2 world created, and it's going to create a whole slew of problems that, you know, Web 4.0 and then 150 years from now we'll have to solve. But we'll be robots by then, so it won't matter.
I want to make a jingle that interrupts our podcast when we get on crypto, so that it's like, theater people talking blockchain, you know, or something like that. So, because it happens every episode.
Oh my God.
It's good to know.
Assign me a vocal part.
Yes, ma'am. But people should, I'm excited, right? Because like, I know there's one company kind of treading around this area, one like VC backed company. And I know there's a handful of Web3 sort of NFT focused companies trying to look at the theater, but I hope that people will listen to this, especially people from outside the theater, because I think we have an extraordinary perspective in a really IP-centric, ownership-heavy, and problematically like financially distributed industry. Like, where there's a lot of ideas here, like you were saying, Joe and Carlin.
We can share all of them over a bottle or three of
them. Yeah.
Totally.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, more and more and more as we read the briefing, the Broadway briefing every morning during our coffee meetings, scrums, you know, Web3 is poking up less and less infrequently. We're still waiting. Like, I'm excited to see, you know, there are a lot of like nuts to crack in terms of really harnessing the possibilities of the Web3 world for the theater industry, rather than just trying to like shoehorn what we recognize now into a digital landscape and then call that the future, which it isn't. And, you know, I think there's a lot of conversations, innovation to be found there. Marquee is hoping to be, you know, one of the people at the forefront of that. And that's part of our like phase 2 and phase 3. But yeah, it's going to be an exciting couple of years. And also hopefully, you know, the whole concept of like a decentralized anything just means we're taking power away from the white dinosaurs that, you know, keep the industry from modernizing.
Well, that seems like a really good segue, as we are at our hour, to just quickly telling everyone where people can find you and how they can talk to you if they're interested in a Marquee.
Yeah, they can visit our website, which is marquee.digital. And all of our stuff is there. Our contact is there. You can also email info@marquee.digital. And we are on all the social media platforms also as variations on marquee._-whatever-it-is digital. Just try them. You'll find us.
Amazing. Well, thank you guys so much for coming and chatting with us today. I'm sure this is only part one of many future conversations on this podcast, but it's a good starter.
Well, we love getting together with you. So thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I love you guys.
Conversation made me feel good.
Uplifting, heartfelt. Yeah, I just feel better. I know we're in that bit of a sophomore slump right now. Slump season?
Even if it's just in our heads, I don't even know. I don't think we're literally busier than we've ever been. So I guess I'm just making up problems for us.
They're real. If you're feeling it, it's real on some level. May not be a fact, but you're feeling it. And it was, yeah, a nice conversation to get a bit of a reprieve from that feeling and remember that bigger vision, remember the bigger world that we play in, remember the great people that we are getting together on this show to talk about that world that we want to create.
Yeah, I feel very privileged that we have, as Carlin was talking about it early in this episode, gotten to watch them build their company just nearly from day one, which has been really wild and neat, and listening to them sort of like benchmark what they did, when they did it, and how they're looking at their second year with them just a year. I know she talks a lot about us having done this for 10 years, but like, let's call it two in the serious mode, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we're really only a year
this
ahead
season
of them.
Was only about 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. This season. Yeah. this is the episode's going to be called The Season. It was just, I feel extraordinarily privileged and so excited that they made it out of year one. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see what they do next. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that.
Yeah. Unlike many of our other guests, yeah. We really like these two.
You're so rude.
Who is even Kate Baldwin? I don't even know who that is.
Oh, Lord. Well, as you can tell, we had a lot of fun today. So thank you for listening and being part of the get together.
The goal of this podcast is to bring people together and have these really important conversations. So share this episode with someone who cares about accessibility, who cares about disrupting systems that, you know, need shaken up.
And who might want a marquee for their theater or arts organization.
Yeah, hit them up, marquee.digital.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Joe.
And we'll see you back here next week. Thank you.